When we first opened, there were these two Taiwanese guys named, well, Will and Bill. And they would come in all the time, and they would sit, and they would grab a drink, and they would wear their high school uniforms.
Yeah.
And so I would always say hi to them. They love comedy. They'd come out. And I went up to them one day. I was like, Will, Bill, love you guys. Keep coming, but can you please change your clothes? Please put on some blue jeans, man. Like, come on.
Welcome to Comedy with an Accent podcast. I'm your Taiwanese comedian, Quan Wen. I interview comedians who perform English stand-up comedy but who are not native English speakers, or they can have a very distinct British regional accent. This podcast is all about comedy, about accent, about languages, and about the comedy technique. So stay tuned if you're interested. Are we recording now?
Yeah.
在录了吗？好。好，那我就做个假的开始好了。
可以啊。
OK。All right, I'm going to do a fake clap and go. I'm too used to working with the same tech in London,
yeah.
And they give me this direction.
I hear that on podcasts. The clap is important, right?
Yeah, it is important. It gives like wake up call. All right, let's do it. Hello, welcome to another episode of Comedy with an Accent podcast. I am in a foreign environment, but that is in my home country. This is absolutely weird. I'm in a studio used by the number one podcast in Taiwan. This is the first one I'm recording outside the UK. I'm now talking to a dear guest, some very influential and important in the Taipei stand-up comedy scene. Ooh, he's...
I'm looking over my shoulder. Wait, who's coming?
Taken out. Where is this even coming from? Anyway, today's guest is Sam Yarborough from Vermont, United States. Welcome. Hi.
Thank you so much for having me. So fun to be here.
Sam, I didn't know your full name until you went on the other podcast. Yeah,
Yarbs is the shortened version. Yeah, I chopped it down for ease of use and pronunciation, right?
Where does the name come from?
I think there's an Earl of Yarborough going way back. I mean, there's like Earls of everything, right, in the UK. It's just the most boring.
Yes, that's actually true. Does that word, borough, make sense to American people?
Oh, yeah, borough. Yeah. Like in New York, the five boroughs of New York.
Because I've lived there for a while. I mean, it's not my language, but to watch American tourists, I'm being rather disoriented and say, can I go to Surrey Quay? Be politely corrected by English. It's pronounced as Key.
I made that mistake in Singapore. Yeah. Where's the boat quay? Yeah. This is one of those words I'd only read before.
Well, you're heartbroken to be corrected.
No, I think I was because I'd gotten it wrong in an open mic set before I was doing it. So I'm glad to. Yeah, get the
I have to explain very quickly. People will be thinking, what's going on? Because normally I speak with very accented people.
Mm-hmm.
And have you lost the mojo of like your whole point of
you
your
ran
podcast?
Out.
Like you're running out of guests so fast. There's a reason behind it. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to ask you my opening question. That do you think you have an accent when you speak English?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I've been. I think I have my accent's all over the place, though. People struggle to place where I'm from if I don't tell them. People guess Canadian. People guess English over in Taiwan.
What is the Canadian bit from?
I don't know. I don't do the aboots or the Surreys. No, I don't have any.
I'm sorry. I know Canadian. Most of you don't sound like that, but I did.
They do. It's fine. Why are we apologizing to Canadians? What?
We are not the South Park movie. Blame Canada. Anyway, it's cool. All right, you've neutralize your accent to be...
Yeah, that's kind of, just a general, like, Northeast, North American accent, I would guess. I don't know if it's really placeable, but yeah. I would say I have an accent compared to some people, and a style of speaking, too. I speak quickly, I know that.
I would think your accent doesn't sound... Like, if there's different strands of American accent, yours will be considered the accent-free one. At least, I mean, to my insensitive, non-native ears.
Yeah, that's a weird one. Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Is there a neutral? Is there an accent-free? Do you think?
Well, if the American, they are from, I don't know, from the South or some valley girl from California, I can tell. If they're from Boston, maybe I can tell.
Right. Yeah.
But you don't really.
Vermont would be the closest to the Boston accent, like dropping the R's, right? The ka, right? People in Vermont say wicked, you know.
Yeah, because I had a guest on who really mastered the Mandarin language, Jesse.
Jesse Apple, yeah. Appel or Apple? I'm sorry, Jesse.
Appel, yes.
I love him. Okay.
Not Apple,
he's my tea hookup,
Do you buy tea from him?
No, I have not yet, but he's slanging it.
I promise it will promote his tea whenever I talk to someone. So Jesse is English really come from a corner of the States, whereas yours, I don't really know where it's from.
Yeah, no, he's hardcore Northeast. He's got the Boston. He's that great bit about the R's, right? With the the Beijing dialect, right?
Is it because you're more middle class and he's more working class? Is there something about it?
I don't know. I don't know his economic background.
But let's say if you go back to the States and you talk to your mom and dad, is it going to be this accent or something else?
Yeah, this accent, 100%. Yeah. My dad has a bit of a Southern accent, but only comes out when he's talking to his family. He was raised in the South. But most of the time, yeah, we just sound like, I guess, the North American accent, the standard, the one that they're looking for at all the bushi buns here in Taiwan.
So today, this accent is not really interpreted in a literal sense. I think I'm going to talk about your accent and your comedy stage persona.
Huh.
I was listening to the podcast you did this week. You started comedy in Asia. You didn't start comedy in the States.
I started in Kaohsiung, Taiwan.
Yeah. Kaohsiung, Taiwan. Kaohsiung,
as so many have before
thousand,
me.
The biggest poor city. People there a lot. I think they're a bit more authentic.
I love Kaohsiung. Yeah, I wouldn't have left if it wasn't for that. There's just not enough people there for an English-speaking comedy
scene.
Yeah,
so I'm from the capital city.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm one of the...
You're typing all the way. Hanlang, Hanlang. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm not. I think I'm quite
You're
friendly.
You're not at all, yeah. Well, that's what they say in Kaohsiung, yeah. Right? When I moved to Taipei, they're like, oh, everyone there, Hanlang, Hanlang. Their face is so cold.
Yeah, for me, so people from the Southern City, they are the one. They don't wear a helmet when they ride motorcycles.
The further south you go, the worse the driving gets. That's one-to-one correlation, yeah.
You know, how to call that the two-stage, if you want to turn.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The scooter.
Just, yeah, the scooters, right?
Yeah.
I think only people in the north do that. People in the south think that it's kind of like,
but at least in like, even in like Tainan, they'll start doing.
You're a pussy if you abide by the law, right?
In Kaohsiung, they don't even look both ways, though. Oh, you know, in Tainan, they'll peek around. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
If you get down to Pindong, good luck.
So you most perform comedy to people who don't live. It's not exactly true. Okay, I'll do a quick summary of Sam's comedy journey. He started comedy outside the United States. He started comedy in a non-native English-speaking country.
Yeah.
Because the first city you settled in Taiwan, they didn't really have a big scene. So you joined someone and you had this trip every weekend. Basically, you did a road trip in Taiwan.
Yes.
Like a small tropical island.
Yeah, every weekend.
You did a road trip every weekend.
My friend was a surfer. He had a van. So every weekend, we'd pack up his van and go to a different town.
I have no idea how much level of cliche we're talking about. The two white dudes. One is a surfer. So for all the places you go, I was listening to the town you mentioned. Okay, population-wise, this town may look quite significant in the Western world, but they aren't. They are like, some of them are proper shitholes. So...
Wait, which one's a shithole? Are you going to name it? You're going to name
it. Zhunan. When you go there, what are your audience like? Are they expat? Are they locals? Are they city folks? Are they country folks?
Well, it very much depends what city you're talking about. But in general, if we're talking something smaller than Tainan, so we're talking like Jiayi, Douliu, Dulan, we're finding it's mostly the expats who might live in that town or in some surrounding areas or towns out in like the teaching at Bushibans more in the country. So they might come in for a show like that. And maybe a few people, Taiwanese who speak English, who like comedy on YouTube or something like that. And even some who've gone to university and are back visiting family.
Are you talking about white Caucasian like you have infiltrated Taiwan to such locality level?
Yeah. We're everywhere. We're everywhere. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a complete infestation. The island is,
in a very small town, you still manage to find
white people. Yeah, they're teaching. Yeah, a lot of these small towns will still have language centers and bushibans, and there's teachers who go there, you know, for a variety of reasons. Yeah, so it's different. You find there's two types when you go to these towns. I was in Hualien, and there's people who live in Hualien because they choose to live in Hualien.
Right.
They love camping. They love nature. And then there's foreigners who have to live in Hualien because they got fired from their school in Taipei.
So most of my listeners are from the United Kingdom or from the United States. To give people a bit of context, I think there are only probably 3 to 4 cities in Taiwan that have over 1 million population.
Yeah.
All the places talk about, we're talking about potentially 200,000 and 100,000. Yeah. That they are not big.
Or less, yeah.
And there are not much going on. Even if there's something going on, it's very localized.
Right.
So to have like English version of entertainment is quite quirky.
Yes. Might be a once in a month type thing or something like that.
What was your expectation like? It really varied depending on the places you go. Do you have expectation that it's more likely to be an expat crowd? Or it is so mixed that I don't know until I see what they are like?
Honestly, at the time, we were so focused on just trying to find a place we could perform to do material again, because there was so little opportunity to repeat material. And you know, as a comic, how important it is to be able to like do your bits multiple times to improve them. We were just so focused on finding stage time. The audience was like almost a secondary concern. You know, we'd reach out, who knows who's going to show up. Hopefully, if we get 10 people, that's a crowd, that's a show. Great, we can do a show. And sometimes we'd have shows that were better than that. A lot of people would show up and it was really receptive. But from like a planning and execution standpoint, we didn't really think about that. Anyone who's going to show up, we were confident that we'd be able to do okay with anybody who who was there. And we just wanted stage time. That was it.
Does that mean that when you're writing, any idea you want to make sure is universal enough to appeal to both the expats and the local population? Or
I mean, again, at the time, like when I was writing then, because we would do these shows every 2 weeks in Kaohsiung, so I had to constantly just write new material all the time. And I was only a year or two in. Most of it was very, very bad. You know, it wasn't very good. My concern was just anything that I thought was funny. I never had time to worry about like tailoring material to be like, oh, I need to be universal or blah, blah. It's just any idea that's funny, I need to write about it because I need this new material for the show that's happening next week. It was kind of freeing in that way. You didn't like it basically. For the first 2 years of writing, I just never ran from any premise or any joke that I liked. But you remember when you got started, the first 2 years, most of that stuff is not good.
I know, but surely you would have noticed that by some point, there are certain jokes that will land really well, say in front of the expat, and you just die on yours in front of Taiwanese people.
Yes, 100%.
But surely by that stage, you realize, oh, it's not because the joke is bad, it's they are not relatable.
Right, yeah, absolutely.
And what was your thought process once you realized certain topics or certain references wouldn't appeal to both sides? Do you ditch it or do you keep it and you only use it when you see the crowd? It's that kind of crowd.
You would shift it in a certain way for certain crowds. For example, if there's a much more heavily Taiwanese crowd, I would lean way, way more into the self-deprecating and making sure that it's understood more clearly.
Right.
That the butt of the joke. When I'm talking about learning Chinese and Chinese being hard and making bad jokes about Chinese being too hard, that it's clear the audience understands I'm the idiot here.
I'm going to, like a mosquito, I'm going to latch on you.
Excellent.
I'm going to focus on that word. You'll be more self-deprecating.
Yes.
Why did you choose to be a self-deprecating Caucasian American in front of a Taiwanese crowd?
Because otherwise, the perception is that if you're making fun of Chinese, you're an outsider coming in and like making
Taiwanese.
Fun of... Yeah, no, I'm talking about the language.
Oh, the language.
I'm talking about the language. Yeah. So you're making fun of like the language that they know, right?
Yeah.
Or like poking fun at the culture, you have to make sure that, because like there's bad comedy that you can see of expats just bitching about things in Taiwan that are inconvenient or something like that, right? That they perceive as inadequate compared to how they feel about stuff back home. I have a bit about holidays, about comparing Taiwanese holidays to American holidays and how I think American holidays are better. But during that bit, you have to be sure to making fun of yourself. Otherwise, it's just this weird kind of cultural supremacist rant. You have to be letting the audience know that you understand that you're the idiot in these jokes. Your lack of appreciation for these holidays comes from talking about tomb sweeping day. We wouldn't do that in America because we don't do chores on the weekend, you know, like
Just about to say, you did mention that on the other podcast and I found the observation hilarious.
Yeah, but in the context of that joke, that idea, it's the idea that Americans we're too lazy to do these kind of traditional things. I'm communicating a lack of understanding is what keeps me from appreciating it. I'm not making fun of the culture and the tradition.
It's a very long journey I finally got here. So what I wanted to say is you're a native English speaker and in my mind, I think for a lot of Taiwanese people, you don't have an accent.
Yes.
Your accent, the way you speak English, is exactly what we were taught.
Yeah.
You were the English on the cassette or on the CD.
Mm-hmm.
You're our textbook English. When you perform to a predominantly Taiwanese crowd, your English convey you don't think of a stage persona, but there's a certain level of superiority.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Western cultural dominance. And whether you are self-conscious or not, I think that's why you chose to be self-deprecating.
Certainly, yeah. Whether I had thought that all the way through, as you just very well elucidated right there. whether I had had that thought through, that certainly at least the perception of that was enough at the beginning.
But when you see someone unaware of it and they just keep poking the host country's culture and they bomb?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
or is it because it happened to you yourself?
No, because I was aware of that from the beginning.
Yeah,
from the start, I was very, very self-aware that like if I'm making fun of something else, the subtext has to be that I'm the idiot in this situation. That was something that I wrote consciously.
And are you also clear that when you're observing something here, you are the outsider? Or you try to say, actually, I've lived here long enough. I'm one of you guys too.
Only if I'm doing that to play with the idea that I still actually don't know anything, right? That
like
for example, telling someone in the audience like, oh, you don't actually need to learn Chinese. I can get you fluent in Chinese with two words.
Right.
And then you walk through that. Clearly that demonstrates you don't actually understand Chinese, right? So you play with that fake expert persona.
I find it very interesting because when I perform in the UK, and I do think there was over-reliance on poking the locals.
Mm-hmm.
Even I get sick of it. If I go to an open mic night and there are people from the minority background or people from a foreign country and just keep saying British people are evil, white people are shit, British people just used to conquer the world.
So that's very interesting. So what you kind of elucidating or talking about is like the difference of you're moving to London, you're a minority performer, performing on stage.
Yes.
The kind of ease to make fun of British culture, but myself, even though technically I'm a minority in Taiwan, when I'm on stage making fun of Taiwan, those two situations are completely different.
In terms of pecking
order, the power
order,
dynamics are kind of...
Exactly, the power dynamic was the word I was looking for. Mm-hmm. But what I noticed at those comedy nights, there are just way too many people to go for the quick jokes.
Yeah.
Let's say sometimes I go to a themed immigrant comedy, mm-hmm. and if every single person only do the same approach that our British people are stupid, British people are shit, by the third or fourth act, the crowd is fed up with it.
That's very interesting, because I can see in Taiwan sometimes you see comics who are so conscious of that that you'll see white comics on stage talking about how shit white people are in Taiwan. And they're almost like getting out in front of that themselves, like making fun of...
But does that go down well here, locally?
I think it would... If the joke is clever, possibly, it can. It can hit being like, yeah, foreigners are the worst, right? Yeah, but it's kind of the same, like cheap and kind of lazy that you mentioned in a separate context would be, right?
So,
That's interesting. I don't think I've ever fully thought through the whole like ideas behind it, but what you said, the way you laid it out, definitely.
Let's say when you go to those towns and you realize today you have a more expat-y crowd. Mm-hmm. What do you think? How would you switch your persona or style?
How would I switch my persona or style? At this point, I don't know if I would.
Would you be bothered to establish where they're all Americans first, or you don't really care?
Yeah, I do. I would want to ask where people are from.
Yeah.
I wouldn't let that tailor necessarily the direction of like the set or where I was going with it. Most of the time when I'm doing these shows on the road, I'll be hosting as well. So as a host, as you did the other night, I'll be starting with a lot of crowd work, talking to people, where you're from, getting the sense of the room and things like that, trying to build some rapport. But in general, I think I'm confident enough with the material now that I don't need to fine tune it too much for where the room is at. But yeah, certainly in the early days when there's expats. But I'm interested. I'm trying to answer your question honestly because like I said, I don't know if I'd ever thought through the whole relationship of power dynamics and things
but
like that.
I would have thought you would have made some micro adjustments subconsciously. So if you can think about what you had done differently, thinking back with all the
theories. I think certainly there were some jokes there maybe would be a little more like sexual in content, that if it was like a large, like rowdy expat crowd, those are going to be a more drinking crowd. They might be up for a more blue or dirty type show as well. That's another aspect of the different types of crowds.
So what I can take away from the statement is Taiwanese people don't drink enough.
They really do not. As a bar owner, I would like to absolutely. If there's one thing I could say.
We get kind of brutish.
Occasionally, it can be. Or you have to give them an excuse to let their hair down. You can't just start right in. Or maybe you can if you're very skilled. Like I think, you know, some of the stuff on crowd work when you were going at people, you did it in a very, very subtle and funny way.
It's different. It's easier for me to do dirty jokes.
That is true. Yeah. The female comics and gay comics, which I think is just kind of natural. There's something weird, like talking about the power dynamics we talked before, about a straight white guy talking about having sex with his girlfriend on stage, that can be a little bit... We used to do a show with the Against Humanity cards, and you'd find Taiwanese people would start submitting like the dirtiest cards, because you give them an excuse kind of through the context of the game to let their hair down a little bit.
So my question is, now I want to understand, what are Taiwanese people like in a confinement of the comedy club or the comedy room?
Yeah.
What are Taiwanese people like to you?
Taiwanese people as an audience, I think.
As an audience.
Like very... It depends what context they approach it from too. And I don't mean to duck every one of your questions with "it depends," but I think there's such a tendency to like kind of lump people universally into like, oh, Taiwanese crowds are like. So
yeah,
we understand we're drawing with a broad brush.
We're trying to stretch some characteristic that people are used to watching comedy in a Western country wouldn't even think of.
I think that, well, one thing that Taiwanese audiences are much less likely to walk. They're much less likely to leave. They will sit there in uncomfortable silence for a longer time. They want to be polite, is what I'd guess. Yeah.
Because when we study, you are not allowed to leave for a loo break. Okay. You wait until the break to go to the loo. Oh,
okay.
Unless
I got to tell my students at Bushiban this. They're taking bathroom breaks every 5 minutes.
Because it's so okay for Americans to just go pee without asking.
One of the great freedoms of our country, yes.
Do you equate like to the right to own guns?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I can shoot my way to any bathroom I want. Yeah.
So we are like dogs being trained all our life, unless it's absolutely urgent, which means that your shit has reached the exit.
Yeah.
You wait. You program. You time. You plan your urinal activity.
I have had two students pee in class, actually. There might be some into what you're saying. Yeah, they peed in class because they were too afraid to ask.
How old are they?
They were young, like five or six. Yeah,
poor them. Yeah, anyway, so Taiwanese crowd are less likely to leave in the middle.
It's very
also, because we don't drink quite as much beer, so there's less pressure on our bladders.
Yeah. It's very funny. I'll often ask, you know, you start when you're hosting a show, make some noise if this is your first time here, right?
Yeah.
Who's been here before? And Taiwanese people will always raise their hands. They won't say, they won't clap, they won't woo, they'll raise their hands. It's like, really? This is like teacher talking to the... Yeah, it's very funny. But yeah, very polite. And I think most of the Taiwanese who are coming are approaching it kind of with curiosity. Like I said, there's not a long stand-up comedy club tradition. Brian talked about this a lot. There was confusion even about like what open mic is. What's the difference between open mic and show? Even with the translation, maybe you can help with this for the Chinese. The translation, like what is a comedy show?
Mm.
Like 脱口秀的表演 is like, how do you even translate that directly into Chinese?
The difficulty is the original translation of a talk show doesn't involve like late night with Jimmy.
Exactly. Yeah. So people would show up to an open mic expecting it to be like the Tonight Show, you know? They're like, oh, Bo on the talk show, right? And then it's just Brian in a t-shirt doing jokes. And they're like, what kind of talk show is this? Obviously, it's something kind of new to the Taiwanese culture. So the Taiwanese audience is approaching it with that kind of curiosity of like, what exactly is this? What are we supposed to do? Like, and where that's, I think, more interesting, I mean, the English scene is what I'm, you know, mostly involved in here. But the energy, I think, and the excitement's on the Chinese side, because it's only in the last 3 years that you have all of these new performers coming in and starting to do Chinese language stand-up. If one theory of change holds is that the people who've started in these last 3 years, a couple years down the road, we're going to have these 5-year experienced people who are going to lead Taiwan comedy in a new direction, right? That's where the excitement is.
Well, actually, I've heard of this. Mm-hmm. People in China, for example, went to stand-up comedy show as a way to learn English.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this happens. Yeah, yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, yeah. People practice.
Did it happen here as well?
We had some students coming for a while from, I hope, a university. I hope they weren't high schoolers. They would come in and they were like practicing a speech class. They had a speech class and they would sit in the back for like, there was like a month in a row. They would sit at every open mic and then finally one of them came up and did their speech during the open mic. And it wasn't like a joke. So they just did they practiced their speech.
Although in the realm of alternative comedy, that's hilarious.
It was amazing. I was like, hey, technically there's no rules. 5 minutes. You can talk about whatever you want. So,
they say they did manage to improve their English comprehension?
Yes, but I think they were being nice. Yeah, yeah. But they're being very polite. Yeah. We get a lot of students. There's a lot of interest from younger kids and students coming out to the shows. Yeah.
How young are we talking?
That can be a problem. Yeah. We first opened, there were these two Taiwanese guys named, well, Will and Bill. And they would come in all the time and they would sit and they would grab a drink and they would wear their high school uniforms.
Yeah.
And so I would always say hi to them. They love comedy. They'd come out. And I went up to them one day. I was like, Will, Bill, love you guys. Keep coming, but can you please change your clothes? Please put on some blue jeans, man. Like, come on. Imagine you walk into a bar, the first thing you see is two guys in high school uniforms.
You never know. Maybe they've decided the stage persona they need.
That's true. There is like, yeah, maybe they were doing a student bit, but I think they were just audience. I don't think they were performing.
No, but it's a thing about Taiwanese students. Yeah. It's too difficult to bring another outfit.
Right.
You just walk around until you go home in your student
uniform. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Student clothes. Yeah,
and also there are some schools, students are obsessed with the uniform.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like the Taipei first.
Yeah, yeah. You
want everyone to know. They
everyone
went to the
know.
Best.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
About the Taiwan-China question, how much is that being played by third?
Oh, huge, yeah, yeah. I mean, well, the most, like, you know, patronizing thing you can do to the audience would be like, hey, yeah, f*** China, right? You know, and then to try to get on the side of the Taiwanese crowd by being like, I'm pro-Taiwan, I'm anti-China or something like that.
What about do people go on stage and say, don't be delusional, mm-hmm. you guys are part of China, it's all gonna come very soon.
Yeah. That can be quite funny if it's done well, right?
But has it been?
Yeah, I've seen it done well before, yeah, yeah. I think Jamie Wong played with that probably as well as I've seen it done,
to
right?
Her.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, she's talked about her dating history colonizing all of Taipei, right? That's an example playing with that sensitive subject very, very well. With anything, with any sensitive subject, whether it's like Taiwan, China, like abortion, you know, all these very sensitive topics, they're all like high stakes poker, right? Where the rewards are extreme, but the loss is also extreme. If you're going to play with something as sensitive as Taiwan and China and the history there, if you're going to make a joke, you better be sure it's a really good joke. Because if it lands, it's going to go great. You're going to have a great response. But if it fails, you're going to look really horrible. It's a chips all in move.
But I don't know, even if it's a really good joke, it's such a sensitive topic and we don't... Like, the hatreds on both sides are so strong.
Mm-hmm.
And also because of the lack of comedy culture here.
Yeah.
I don't know whether it would work, though.
I think there's also the longer, you know, like I've been in Taiwan, of assuming everyone also has a uniform opinion about that issue is kind of an early mistake. Yeah. In Taiwan, right? It's very, very kind of naive assumption is that everyone in Taiwan hates China and wants to be independent. But there's quite a variety and nuance of opinion. Mm. Certainly younger crowds are going to lean more pro, whether it's independent or just don't want to talk about it or just leave us alone or status quo, whatever you want to call that. The younger crowd might lean more towards that. But that's certainly not the uniform. It's not a 90% given issue in Taiwan, yeah. Right? So the longer you see in Taiwan, the more kind of nuance and the lack of understanding. There's just such a tendency, and it's such an arrogant American thing to do, to apply American political framework onto Taiwan, right? To look at something as simple as be like, oh, the KMT, they're like Republicans. The DPP, they're like Democrat.
Yeah, that is just so wrong.
And it's just so wrong.
You just assume the division is between right and left. Yeah. No, it's always between pro-China or independence. It's not the same thing.
That's the main framing issue. But then within that too, there's there's enormous nuance even within that, right?
To put in perspective, I guess that is similar to maybe talking about vaccination in America.
Sure.
Because it's so polarized. But you can't expect audience. There must be someone who agree only on one side and some only on the other one. And some just want to stay quiet.
Right.
They don't even want that to be discussed. For British crowd, it would be something about Brexit, leaving the European Union, and also the vaccination as well.
Perfect analogy. Exactly. And with all of those, again, like this high stakes poker, right? There's a reward.
I don't really talk about them unless I think I have a really good angle, and often I don't. So I don't want to be condescending or like preaching in an echo chamber. Let's say if you perform in front of an expat crowd here compared to the home crowd, what's the difference to you?
In Taipei, like if I'm performing in front of a home crowd, you mean back in the U.S.?
Yeah.
I've only done, I'm so ignorant about the stand-up scene even in the U.S.
I know, but just based on the few experience you had.
I mean, my set would get chopped in half because I wouldn't have all my Taiwanese material. I'd have to spend the first half explaining how 7-Elevens are different than to be able to get into my jokes.
So even if you're performing in front of expat crowds, you draw heavily on the shared experience of living in Taiwan.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right.
The things and interactions day to day that you're coming up with, what I was drawing all my material from.
You were talking about traveling in Asia, in different Asian cities to perform in Bangkok, in Bali, and even Ulaanbaatar. Do you find it easy or is it possible to do comparing stereotypes on different nationalities when you perform to crowds in big Asian cities? How does it work?
I don't like to do that as much.
Means you notice some other comics would do it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, in some places, I don't know. I think it's just such a natural product of the environment. Like Singapore is so split between Indian, Malay, and Chinese.
Right.
And every comic there has a joke about Indian, Malay, and Chinese, right? The difference.
So they will have their version of an Indian, Malay, and a Chinese walk into a bar.
Boom. Yeah, exactly. But that's the cultural context. They all live in that all the time.
Yeah.
Right? And so I wouldn't go into Singapore and try to make my own jokes about like Indian, Malay, or Chinese or something like that.
You want to make your New Year resolution for that?
change it up. Yeah, yeah.
Here I want to pause and say I'm inviting Sam as a very interesting example. Okay, I'm going to be a little bitch here right now.
No worries.
There's a stereotype of English-speaking expat comedian in Asian cities. A lot of them are not very good. And I met Sam about 3 years ago. He's very solid. I remember watching his show. You were hosting. I thought, this is a legit comic.
Thank you.
But you know what I'm saying. Like, you must have come across them. I know you wouldn't want to name them because want to maintain friendship with them. But a lot of the expat comedians, they are not very funny. Yeah. But they go to the Asian cities early enough. So they hold a lot of power either by arranging shows or running the scene. So
big fish, small pond,
exactly. People are too afraid of upsetting them. So people wouldn't really point out that whether they're actually good or they're a little bit shit. Yeah. You made a statement on the other podcast. I keep mentioning, I will put the link in just out of respect for the other Firelight Chats. You say that you're happy not just be a comedian who makes a living out of being a comedian.
Yeah.
You're happy to be just involved in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Would you explain that rationale?
Yeah, basically, since I started doing comedy, I love comedy. I love doing comedy. But I also love Taiwan and I wanted to stay here in Taiwan. And looking around Asia, what I saw, there's not a lot of people who make their living doing English-speaking comedy who are living in Asia.
Yes.
Right? There's a few, but there's not a lot. That list is not very long. better. Okay. So in terms of what could I realistically like work towards and get better at, the idea of I'm going to write every day and one day my Netflix special is going to come. They're going to come to Taiwan and see how funny I am. And I'm going to be famous. That seemed like something that, if that's ever possible, something I could also work on, perhaps a more realistic path side by side with that. Building a career in comedy, doing things like producing shows, owning a venue, working with other comics, being a writer. Those are actual much more attainable goals that you can work at in the short term. And right. So that's what I moved to Taipei to do.
Right.
And I was lucky enough within 2 years to open 2-3 Comedy Club with some other comics and with the beer company. I don't know what the likelihood that I'll ever become a famous stand-up comedian is, but I know that if I work hard, I can make a living and a life for myself in the comedy business and be involved in comedy. That benefits me in the long term, selfishly,
so you're
but also worth
basically
it.
Being realistic and practical.
Yeah.
Because if you want to pursue solely being a comedian, the trade-off would mean that you probably have to leave Taiwan, and it's not a price you're willing to pay.
Yeah, I don't want to leave the work I put in that I built here and the scene here, and I don't want to leave the country either. Just my personal roots and attachment here. You know, I've got two cats. I'm in deep, you know, so it's...
I have two last questions.
Sure.
First, do you want to go back? Do you miss doing a road trip?
I do. We're doing a show in Sinju this month. And then I think we're going down. I'm trying to arrange a road show down in Dulan. I do occasionally still. We were in Hualien last month, too. So I occasionally, one weekend a month, I'll stay on the road.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you promote the show in those towns, cities?
The key is you got to find a local contact there who has a good sense of like what the city is. In Hualien, there's a restaurant called the Salt Lick. It's a Western-style restaurant. The owner there, Jason, clearly knew the expat going out English-speaking crowd in Hualien, and he packed the restaurant for us, basically. So you have to trust the local contact.
I don't know what to describe those towns. If there's one restaurant that can coordinate the majority of expat in the city, chances are either the town is small or the expat population is way too small.
Yeah, it's tiny. Yeah, but we got 70 people out for that show. It was great. It was fantastic. I was happy. Great. Yeah, I got paid in ribs. It was delicious. Yeah, so it was nice. Yeah.
Okay. Second question is, I think for comedy, there's a conflicting principle. There's to appeal to people from different places, you want to be universal. Mm-hmm. Yet comedy is funnier when it's specific.
Okay, yeah.
So when I'm writing joke, I'm always torn between, is this too British? Will I be able to tell this joke outside the UK? So that question is now back to you when you develop new bits.
Yeah.
Or like, how does that conflicting principle affect your decision-making process?
I feel like talking to you more that maybe I should be more thoughtful about the stuff what I'm doing.
You don't. There's no obligation whatsoever.
You think a lot about it, man. Like the way that I started when I was getting comedy was the necessity of creating new material so quickly. I never run away from any idea that I think is funny, whether it's a very local type of line or whether it's something that's more broadly applicable. If it excites me, if I get a little bit of a sense that there's something there, I'm going to try to write on it and then take it onto the stage. So in that point of writing, I'm not worried about whether it's too specific or too local because I just need the material. Mm-hmm. If I have a show lined up, I'm going to go to Singapore or something like that. Okay, let's see if I can take the Taiwan parts out of these bits. Is there anything that's universally applicable to the experience of traveling or living abroad or just being a person in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah.
But I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't think about it that much in that first writing phase.
Yeah.
I don't have any interference of that kind of imagining the audience. Because for me, when I'm writing that joke, is if it's funny for me, if I can make myself laugh. Mm. Because normally it's not going to be funny the first few times I try it, no matter the audience at all, because I'll need to heavily edit it and strip it down, right?
So I guess what you're saying is it's dictated by the circumstances around you.
Yeah.
If someone invites you, say we're going to do an Asian comedy festival elsewhere, and you say yes to that, and then now this is on the back of your mind, and you just subconsciously start to think, I need to do more things that not just Taiwanese people find funny.
Yeah.
And they were impact how you develop your material in that period of time.
Absolutely. But for me, I have to feel excited about that bit. And that is enough for me. Mm-hmm. If I feel excited about the bit, I'm confident in stagecraft and persona that it's going to go well in whatever audience. Now, experience has shown me that's not always true, but I'm confident that I can get it across in a way. I feel like maybe I'm just less focused on what the audience's reception is going to be when I'm in that writing stage of working on new material or crafting a bit. But when it comes time to build a half an hour, build an hour set, then that's the time when you start to think about who's the audience for this, who's going to come and see this show. Am I going to be headlining in Taipei at my club? And this can be a lot of friends and things like that. So it's not going to be until that point that I start worrying about a specific audience. Yeah.
And do you actively seek chances to perform outside Taiwan and at those Asian big city internationally?
Yeah, I've been lucky enough to, this is all pre-COVID, unfortunately, right? So Taiwan, as you know, our quarantine. So even post, when the rest of the world was considered already post-COVID, we still had a quarantine. So that upon entering the country, you had a 2-week stay in a hotel. Yeah. That made any kind of travel basically impossible. It wasn't until October 13th. So since then, first, my priority has been getting international shows at our club running. And then the second half of this year is going to be getting back out and perform around Asia and getting shows up. Yeah.
Cool. So I'm going to end this podcast as the potential answer to any of the listeners who had this question. Why did you just get American guy on who performs in English? I say, well, he may not have an accent when he speaks English, but his audience is never the same in the most literal sense. So I'm going to thank my guest today, Sam Yarborough. Thank you for coming
on the podcast.
Yeah. How do people find you on social media?
You can do sam.yarbs on Instagram or 23 Comedy. 23 Comedy, that's the place to find everything. Yeah.
Yeah, he is the Caucasian face behind around the 2-3 Comedy Club.
The less popular half of 2-3 Comedy. Yeah.
Come on. Save it, right?
Well,
thank you. Thank you, Sam. Cheers.
Thank you so much. Bye. Bye-bye.